I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll. Please proceed.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Chair Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
Representative O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Representative Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Representative Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Representative Hansen, present. Representative Heinzeman. Representative Heinzeman. Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Representative Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Representative Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Representative Mason, present. Representative Meckland. Representative Meckland. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Representative Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell, present. Representative Sandstead. Representative Sandstead. Representative Thompson is excused. Representative Heinzeman. Representative Howard. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Meckland. Representative Sandstead. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 15th, 2022?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Christensen moves to approval of the minutes for February 15th, 2022. Any discussion? Representative Cleborne?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I've not seen the minutes for yesterday. I just want to make sure that I was marked present in the minutes, please. I arrived late.
I will have our CLA let us know if that is accurate. Mr. Parker.
Representative, sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Cleborne, I do have you as present in yesterday's minutes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 15th, 2022 are approved. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've been receiving and printing out all of these reports from the Office of Higher Education, and I'm wondering, could we get a high-level presentation from OHE on each of these, just high-level? The last one that came out was the dual training competency grant and a report. And a couple of these are very long. Not that I can't read through all of them. I certainly can. But maybe, you know, for the benefit of the entire committee, it would be good if we could hear what these are, what the points are being made in these. So if we have time in our agenda sometime, perhaps that could be on it. Thank you.
Very good idea. Thank you for that idea. And so what we're going to do now is we are going to hear from the University of Minnesota Students Association today. We have a number of presenters and a limited amount of time, so I will ask members to save their questions until all of our presenters have had a chance to speak. First up, we have Dylan Young, the Morris Student Body President. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Young. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Bernardi and members of the committee, Palam Aiello, it is an honor to be here. Haamitakuyapi, Chante Washte Nape Chizapalo. Wasichu Ia, Dylan Young Amachiapielo, Malachota, Shishangu Oyate Mataha, Parmali Otuwi'ed Machaje, Morris Otuwi'ed Wathi, Minnesota Morris Wounspe Wakantuya Ed Wayawa. My English name is Dylan Young. I am Lakota and a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. I am from Parmali, South Dakota, which is located on the Rosebud Indian Reservation. Currently, I live in Morris, Minnesota, where I attend the University of Minnesota Morris and study political science, English, and Native American studies. Currently, I serve as the president of the Morris Campus Student Association, or MCSA for short. Our campus is student government. It's impossible for me to speak about what Morris means to me without starting with our campus's complicated history. Before 1909, the land our campus was built on was once a federal Indian boarding school. At this time, education was used as a tool of assimilation and cultural genocide against Native American people. The effects that this education had on our tribes are still felt to this day. Native students at Morris are the grandchildren of the students that attended these schools and had the luck to survive and pass down their oral histories, including myself. I have spent a lot of my time in Morris deciphering what the history means for our campus and for myself as a Native student attending the university. When I was a freshman, I felt anger towards Morris. I would ask myself, why should an institution that once did so much damage to communities such as my own be allowed to function today, even if it is not in its current form? Why not bury the past and move on? I especially disliked the multi-ethnic resource center, the only remaining building on campus from the boarding school era. If I was speaking to you 3 years ago, I would have told you the building needed to be torn down. Since then, my anger has tempered and I have found the answer to my question. Ironically, the multi-ethnic resource center was the answer to my question. That building is the main hub for some of the departments and student organizations that have most greatly impacted me during these last 3 years as a Morris student. That includes our Department of Equity, Diversity, and Intercultural Programming, the Native American Student Success Program, and several student organizations on campus, including Circle of Nations Indigenous Association, which I was the leader of during my sophomore year. As one of the co-chairs of CNIA, I helped create a space on campus for Native students to socialize and bond over our unique shared experience. I have shared plenty of laughs and plenty of tears with my fellow Indigenous students in that building these last few years, and it has become highly important to my life. Additionally, I am a peer mentor for the Native American Student Success Program, where I mentor freshman students and promote their academic success and retention within the university. Let me tell you, it has amazed me to see what our Native students are capable of. I thought I was hired to give them advice and help them succeed, but every day it's been them who's been teaching me. My peer mentoring and time as CNIA co-chair are two experiences that have shaped me into the leader and turned this lost, confused, and angry kid from the reservation into Morris's student body president. I never thought something like that was possible, and it's all thanks to my experiences as a Morris student. Ultimately, the Multi-Ethnic Resource Center is a metaphor for what the University of Minnesota Morris means to me and everything our institution and campus can stand for, given that we receive adequate funding from the state of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota Morris stands for renewal and healing. This campus that once housed trauma and horrors now provides high-quality liberal arts education to our diverse student body and prepares us to be leaders in the Minnesota State's workforce. It is symbolic of the reason why maintaining and preserving our historic campus is so important. Morris's past cannot be undone, but the now and the future are still being written, and I'm here today to ask you for your help writing that. Of the five University of Minnesota campuses, Morris has the worst infrastructure by far. Earlier this year, I was presented a chart that showed more than 50% of our facilities are either in poor or critical condition, or below average condition. To be frank, Chair Bernardi, I find that ridiculous and frustrating. A student's living and learning environment should not be in such poor condition. That is not even to mention the institutional dedication Morris has to sustainability. We've been ranked as the number one campus in the United States for producing the most renewable electricity on campus per student. So we're kind of a big deal. The culture of sustainability we foster is one of the top reasons students love this campus. But it's going to be hard for us to keep that up without support from the state. Right now, everyone here is working hard to reach our goal of carbon neutrality. And the money we're asking for in this bonding request is going to take us one step forward towards that. One of the most important items in the bonding bill for Morris students is the installation of an elevator in the multi-ethnic research center. I wanted to share a story from a friend of mine. Her name is Delaney Teske. She is from Buffalo, Minnesota, and studies English just like me. In fact, she's even the vice president of the English Club. She's also a member of MCSA's executive committee. Delaney was born with a 25% chance of living and a visible disability that affects her entire nervous system. Because of this, she is mostly confined to a motorized wheelchair. Delaney considers going to college and attending Morris to be one of her proudest achievements, but it has also made her cognizant of the accessibility issues that we have on our campus. Right now, there are only two spaces on campus Delaney and other students who are wheelchair bound can live in and access easily. Luckily, our Disability Resources Department and Office of Residential Life are very accommodating and able to adapt the dorms to our students' needs. Some of the other buildings on campus, not so much. There are buildings on campus that Delaney has never even seen the inside of because there is no way for her to access them due to no elevator or separate entrance. One of those buildings is the MRC. As the main hub for all of our equity and diversity programming, we need to add an elevator to the space immediately, because until then, there is a very visible structural barrier preventing our students from appreciating the intercultural competency that is essential to the Morris experience. Delaney told me our fantastic university staff have made many simple improvements in the past 3 years that have helped her experience, from creating better signage for elevators to changing the placements of buttons that open doors. These are little things that have a huge impact, and we can't devalue that. But we also do need a couple of big things that make a big impact too, and that is impossible without adequate funding for campus accessibility. Getting that elevator in the MRC is important, and so are the other infrastructure items in this bonding bill. But it's only the beginning. I understand I'm a little biased, but I would like the committee to understand that this is a truly special campus with some very important missions to accomplish within our state. And the only way we're going to do that is with adequate funding for our campus's infrastructure and accessibility, starting with the installation of an elevator in the MRC. Kalamayelo, thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to Vinayaka Sharma from the Community Advisor in Residential Life from Crookston. Welcome to our committee.
Hello. Representative Bernardi, I'm Vinayak Sharma, the president of the Crookston Student Association, and also, as you mentioned, the residential life community advisor here at the Crookston campus. I'm an international student from India, and specifically New Delhi, India, a senior pursuing my bachelor's in software engineering with a minor in information technology management. And it's my honor today to speak with the committee to present Crookston's perspective on why state funding is necessary to support the students' financial needs on our campus. Just to start, I would like to mention that the state funding to support students' financial aid is a priority, as a high percentage of the University of Minnesota's Crookston campus students rely on financial aid to afford a college. And we also have the highest number of first-time students who attend their colleges, to attend college on in their family. So we have the highest number of first-time students in the whole campus community of the five UMN campuses. I would also like to mention the various higher education asset prevention and replacement projects on our campus is another priority, as this benefits everyone on campus, and many of those projects focus on safety items which keep employees and students safe. Just to mention, as we are going through a pandemic and we face ups and downs, so the money provided by the state government really helps us to ensure that our students and employees are safe on campus, and our campus is able to provide all the services to various students we have without causing any major supply chain disruptions or management issues. I would also like to mention that because of COVID-19 and other sensitive issues we are dealing with, like representation and equality, diversity, we also use these funds to run various programs on our campus. We also use these programs to start various organizations such as the Black Student Association and other various ethnic organizations to provide students to have a space where they can bring out their ideas or express their opinions without any fears or hesitation, and also bring up those opinions up to the administration so we can better serve the students with whatever requirements they have. I would like to request the committee to please consider our request for the mentioned funding, and I would really appreciate the committee's support in ensuring that the UMN Crookston campus could safely and successfully provide students with various on-campus services we have. Thank you for your time and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sharma. Now with us, we have from Rochester, is Tessie Burley. And I want to see, she was maybe not going to be able to make it on at the beginning of our meeting, so we saved her for the last student presentation. Let's see if our committee administrator can help out. Oh, there we go. Yes, hi, how are you? I see you scrolling through the top. I now see you. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I had a meeting that thankfully ended early, so I was able to make it. My name is Tessie Burley. I'm the vice president of the Rochester Student Association down at the University of Minnesota Rochester. I do have two other students with me that will also present today, but I will introduce them as their topics come up. And so first I'm going to start with a little introduction of UMR. We are the newest campus of the system of campuses at the University of Minnesota Rochester. We are located in Med City, right across the street from the historically famous Mayo Clinic. And we're also relatively small. We have less than 1,000 students currently, but every year our freshman class is steadily growing. And so we have quite a bit of positive growth coming up that's very exciting. We also have only two main degree tracks. And so what is unique about our campus is that we are strictly health sciences focused. And so our two main degree tracks are the Bachelor's in Science and Health Sciences and the Bachelor's of Science and Health Professions. Additionally, we do have very many partnership programs that our students are able to take advantage of with Mayo Clinic. And those include physical therapy, occupational therapy, nuclear medicine, physician associates, nursing, and research. And so every year we are grateful to provide even more opportunities for our students, and we're able to do so because of our unique location right next to Mayo Clinic. And additionally, underrepresented students make up about two-thirds of our student body. And when we say underrepresented, we typically mean first-generation students or BIPOC students. And that is something that we certainly take a lot of pride in. And one of the things that we are hoping to continue to grow and expand on. And so now that we know a little bit more about UMR, I'm going to give the mic to Angel Lopez, who is going to talk about our first student issue of the two that we'll talk about today.
Welcome to the committee, Angel Lopez. Please state your name for the record and who you're representing.
Hey, my name is Angel Lopez. I am the rep to the CLI, Center of Learning and Innovation. As Tessie was saying, the first issue we have is food accessibility. As students, there is no student cafeteria on campus, nor a meal plan on campus. As a result, we have to buy groceries. Although the school is located in an urban area in downtown Rochester, so there is not very many affordable grocery stores near our campus. With that being said, the closest grocery store located to us is called Food Co-op. The Food Co-op is out of the average student's price range, so it is difficult to buy groceries within the average day. Sorry about that. With that being said, there's other options for maintaining food, which result in fast food chains and restaurants that are close by. However, they may be cheap and they may be expensive, but they're still unhealthy. Another option we have on campus is a food pantry. Now, the food pantry is a student-led activity. We struggle to have abundance of food, and it is a struggle to keep the pantry maintained since a normal of our students is within studying hours and they can't really donate food for other people. Now I would introduce my fellow colleague to present the second student issue, Fatima.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Fatima Farah. Please state your name and proceed.
Hi, yeah, my name is Fatima Farah, and I'm a student senator with the Rochester Student Association. Our second issue is cost of living. We're similar to more traditional campuses when it comes to our tuition, loan fees, and book costs. Where we differentiate is our housing and transportation costs. Housing is more expensive at UMR because without a meal plan, we have to pay for apartments with kitchens. They also have laundry and bathrooms in each apartment. $1,080 is the cheapest option for housing that we offer, which is a double room. There are single, more private room options that get even more expensive. Students are required to live on campus for at least 1 year, and afterwards, most students choose to move off of campus because it's cheaper. Additionally, our transportation can be expensive. Parking is very expensive in the closest public ramp, partially because the city has nearly 30,000 Mayo employees, many of whom drive to work. It's nearly $200 a month for a student to live at 318 and park their cars on campus. The other option is public transportation or car share services like Uber. This is much cheaper, yet it can still add up and is not as reliable or convenient as having your own car. Because of this, many students cannot afford to bring their own car. And Tusi's going to talk about how you can help.
Thank you very much. The ball's back in Tessie Burley's court. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Fatima and Angel. And so both of those problems are very unique, and neither one of them have quick fixes, as I'm sure it was made very clear. And so as there is no quick fix, there are certainly things that we can do to help in the meantime. And one of that is public funding. And so a lot of our students really do rely on financial aid. And in particular, again, because of our very unique location, a lot of students, myself included, wouldn't be able to be here right now with financial aid. And especially when it comes to things as important as nutritional food and being able to get yourself to class, those are definitely things that we as students prioritize. And at UMR, it can be difficult to prioritize that and your academics, and if you have a job. A lot of students wear very many hats here. And so, that is why we are very honored here today and to have the opportunity to ask for additional funding for our university to help students with these two main issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony from all our testifiers today. And what we will do now is open it up to member questions. And I will be just seeing, hopefully I will see people raise their hands and call start calling on them. Okay, I'm gonna see if I can see it another way here. Here we go. Representative Erickson, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, testifiers. To Ms. Burley, could you talk a little bit about, I know you mentioned some programs that you have at Rochester. Could you mention a little bit about the proficiency or the professionalism of the staff and the benefits that you enjoy from this kind of curricular material since you are located right across from Mayo?
Ms. Burley.
Yes, thank you very much for asking. And so our staff and faculty are absolutely amazing, and it's one of the ways that we're able to make the Rochester campus experience very unique because of our small size. Professors like remember your name, and if you walk past them in the skyway, they'll say hi. And at first I thought that was crazy, but now it's a normal everyday thing, and it really does make a world of difference when it comes to being successful in classes. Additionally, we do have such a strong connection with Mayo. A lot of times we have an absolutely amazing student activities coordinator, and at least a couple times a month we will have panels of professionals from Mayo come in and talk about various things, because the majority of the incoming students to UMR are interested in the healthcare field, but they're somewhat undecided. And so that was myself. I wanted to be a doctor. I didn't know what kind of doctor. I just wanted to be a doctor. And it wasn't until I went to a panel that had three cardiologists from Mayo Clinic that I realized that I absolutely loved cardiology. And I currently work in the medical cardiac ICU at the St. Mary's campus. And so that's yet another wonderful opportunity that I was able to have. And the very strong proficiency of not only UMR staff and faculty, but those that we work in collaboration with at Mayo Clinic has definitely really made a huge impact on that.
Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Well, Madam Chair, that was an absolutely excellent bit of information that we learned about Rochester. And it's so exciting to hear that you have this opportunity to be linked with a great organization like Mayo and learn and study under those professors and I'm sure doctors and your panelists. I just wanted to hear some good word from one of our institutions, and I think that Ms. Burley really answered my question well, and I hope it helped all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. Are there other members? Oh, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Oh, Madam Chair, I mean. I guess I just elevated you. So I just have a quick question for Rochester. Is there any plan to put in some sort of a cafeteria? You know, most of the places that have larger than 1,000, I think you said about 1,000 students, actually have some sort of a cafeteria style things. In fact, even much smaller places have cafeterias. I was thinking of Pine Tech and Pine City, which is a fairly small college and technical school, and they have a cafeteria. So I'm just wondering, what are the plans?
Ms. Burley.
Thank you. Yes, great question again. So there are a few plans, and I'll kind of talk a little about each one of them. So right now, because students have kitchens, we kind of have a lot of small options. And so like Angel mentioned, there are restaurants in downtown. There is the food pantry, and then a lot of students will use their friends' transportation or public transportation to go to grocery stores. But additionally, what we are hoping for in the future is we recently just opened a new student lounge. It is right within our 318 Commons apartment building, and the new lounge is called The Nest. And that actually used to be a restaurant, which is really good. So we're kind of sad that it's gone, but our lounge is amazing. And in our construction of making that a student lounge, we left the kitchen. in there, like intact, with the hopes of eventually being able to find a vendor to contract and come into that kitchen to cook meals for students. And so that is something I believe there was already one search and they had a prospective vendor, but they were unfortunately not able to kind of finish the process and be a part of that. But there is another search that's happening right now. It just takes quite a bit of time, unfortunately. But that is something that we're looking forward to. And additionally, we are looking, and I think this is at least a couple years down the road, but we are looking at creating another freshman apartment building as we continue to slowly get larger. And that would have a cafeteria in it. We do have, we own a plot of land that's about two blocks down the street that our apartment building is on. And it is right across from the Rochester YMCA. And so we kind of have that space, and that's where we're thinking of eventually having an apartment building with a cafeteria. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Representative O'Neill. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, that does. I assume that there was something in the works, because when you get to be that big and you're the University of Minnesota, it seems a little bit of a disconnect that there wasn't some sort of cafeteria or some kind of plan coming. So I appreciate you giving us a fuller picture of what's coming. And I would point out too that the state of Minnesota provides about 18% of the University of Minnesota's budget typically from year to, from biennium to biennium. So, you know, it's some money, but it's not like 100% of the funding that is sent to the University of Minnesota system. The other thing I would say is we are not the, this is in regard to the previous testimony from Morris, but we're not the Capital Investment Committee, we're the Higher Ed Committee. And yes, we sometimes talk about some of those things, but all of those budgeting, or excuse me, bonding requests have already gone to the Capital Investment Committee, and they'll be just determining by rank which ones are the highest priority. It's nice to hear about it, but it's kind of talking to the wrong committee just a little bit about that. The other thing I would say is we are not hearing anything from the Twin Cities Campus Student Associations. I'm a little bit concerned about that, because in December, when I went to the Regents meeting, and the Student Association from the Twin Cities were there in full force, there was a whole large contingency there, and they were really concerned about the pay raise that the president was about to receive and has now received. And it's over some time, but the end result will be a $1.2 million total package for the president, which is quite a bit of a jump, and it is in the middle of her current contract. So it's been renegotiated mid-contract. And those students were incredibly concerned about it, as were the three men's athletic teams that have been cut. So the athletics department has a budget of about $125 million. And the three teams that were cut are less than $2 million of that budget. So yesterday, the Senate actually had a very full hearing representing those three teams. So those three teams came and their students got to speak, and some other alumni got to speak, including some folks that actually had gone to the Olympics. So they were quite concerned because they were given no voice. So I'm a little bit concerned that we're not hearing that here. And I would really encourage us to take time and take space to hear some of those concerns from the Twin Cities campus, as they were loudly represented at the Regents meeting. And they were the only ones that were allowed to speak was the Student Association. Even though there were the three sports teams in the audience, they weren't allowed to speak. So I would really encourage this committee to hear also the three sports teams that were cut. And we're talking about really high level, both academic. One of them was a dentist that had gone through one of the sports programs. So those are some of the things that I would like to hear, and just kind of bring some balance to some of the concerns that were brought, and realize that this is the Higher Ed Committee, not the bonding committee. But it, you know, it's good to hear that all the same, but we're not the right audience for all of that. So thanks so much.
Thank you. And I will point out to members that the Twin Cities students were here on the first day of session. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may be down the path of like not the right committee too, but as I think it was Mr. Young from Morris talking about First of all, thank you for starting with language, Pilame, for that. You talked about not having accessibility to the second floor of a building, correct? Yes.
Ms. Burley? Mr. Young.
The entire building is inaccessible to wheelchair-bound students. Only entrance is upstairs. So there is pretty much no way for a student to access any of the rooms unless they're in the basement if they are in a wheelchair.
Okay,
Representative
thank
Hewlett.
You for thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for clarifying that for me, because my brain automatically went to ADA accessibility. You know, we talk about inclusion and how that's important. Typically from cultural lenses, but I think that being ADA accessible is extremely important. And after you were talking, I started to try to do some quick digging on how that is possible. And do you know if it's not up to code because they're falling under the historical exemption, the historical building exemption, or do you know why it's not ADA accessible?
Mr. Young.
I'm not entirely sure, but that could be one of the reasons. I do know that has made things pretty complicated for the MRC.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I just think that it's really important that as we talk about accessibility for students in schools, that means physical spaces as well. And if there is some sort of a policy language, I don't know who on this committee, and maybe this is when we're in person, things work out like this a little bit better. But if there's somebody here on our team that can look into it, if there's some sort of weird loophole that isn't holding our universities or historical buildings accountable for ADA accessibility for our students, I don't know how or where to start with that, but thank you for bringing that to our attention, because we do want all of our schools and universities to be accessible for every single student in every single space. So we have my commitment to work on that, and any other members here that be interested in looking into that. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you. I was just wondering if Mr. Hopkins happens to know any information about that.
Madam Chair and members, so the University of Minnesota publicly funded higher education institutions are subject to the ADA. I'm not sure particularly about this Morris campus issue, if it has something to do with the historic nature of the building in question. That might be the reason behind this, but I'd be happy to look into it further and get in touch with the University of Minnesota's government relations team to find out more information for you.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say thank you to the students for coming today and taking their time to give us the students' perspective of the institutions that they are currently attending and the needs of students, and for our work committee to take their words seriously and with great value. And as you said, Representative Keeler, to take what we're hearing today to whatever appropriate committee we serve on so that we can make sure that all the needs of students are met. Our responsibility and our role as legislators to do the best we can to help you be successful. So thank you for your stories, thank you for your time, and for sharing those personal details with us.
Thank you. Members, are there any more questions for our student testifiers today? Okay, let's see, let's look one more time. I see that we have no more questions, so we will thank our students for coming today. We appreciate your testimony and your leadership that you helped provide to our committee today and what you provide to the student body and to the future of the state of Minnesota. So thank you so much for being here today, and best wishes to you and your careers. Now with us today, we have back with us, we want to welcome the Office of Higher Education to, they will be finishing their presentation from last week. Joining us is Wendy Robinson. Ms. Robinson, please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Wendy Robinson, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Assistant Commissioner for Programs, Policies, and Grants at the Office of Higher Education. I'm also joined by Nikki Oliver, who will be helping driving the slideshow for me today. I appreciate the opportunity to return this week and share the rest of our update. I do want to take a moment before we dive in, however, to correct myself on one of my answers from last week related to the student loan debt chart shown on slide 8. Representative Cleghorn has asked a great question about whether the chart reflected total debt or debt by degree earned. I want to clarify that the chart shows debt by degree earned, not total debt for all degrees that a student may have earned along their educational pathway. I do want to apologize for that error and make sure that we've corrected that for the record. Now, to pick up where we left off, I'd like to talk about our work toward closing Minnesota's attainment gap. Minnesota continues to be above the national average for percentage of adults with a post-secondary credential, but we still have work to do in order to increase access and equity for all Minnesotans. We currently rank as one of the top 5 states in the country for a percentage of college-educated adults. Unfortunately, while we could be very proud of the high quality and availability of post-secondary education in our state, we know that we continue to have persistent attainment gaps by race and ethnic category. This is why, despite the challenges of COVID, we continue to be highly focused on increasing the number of adults ages 25 to 44 who have earned a post-secondary credential. Our goal is to increase our attainment rate to 70% of all adults by 2025. This goal is one of the loftiest in the nation. In order to meet this goal, we must continue to support efforts that increase access and affordability. We must also continue to work to ensure that students who enter higher education have the necessary academic options, student services, financial aid, and personal resources they need in order to finish what they start. We know that the 70% attainment rate goal will stay out of reach if we do not make progress in increasing the attainment rate for all race and ethnic groups in the state. In this chart, you can see the current 2021 estimates broken down into broad race groups. As you can see, there continues to be noticeable disparities between populations within the state. It is worth noting that the reasons for these disparities are multifaceted and reflect historical exclusion from higher education, as well as current economic, geographical, and social realities. We know that progress toward increasing equity is ongoing work that will continue well past 2025. While looking at broad race categories is a good starting point, we know that it is important to look more deeply at communities within these broad groups, which you'll be able to see on our next chart. Understanding the differences by specific communities is valuable because it helps us identify needs or concerns that might be of special importance to potential students from within these groups. We want to make sure we know if specific communities face any unique barriers to accessing higher education and what the best practices and ideas are for breaking down those barriers. OHE regularly engages in stakeholder consultation with a variety of community organizations, state ethnic councils, tribal leadership, K-12 partners, colleges and universities, and most importantly, students and families to better understand barriers to higher education and the ways that the state can play a role in reducing or eliminating those barriers. Next, I'd like to share the progress that has been made since 2015 and note that the progress made thus far has come as a result of a variety of programs and interventions. Some of these efforts are led by the Office of Higher Education, and many are led by committed educators in both the K-12 system and in the public, tribal, and private colleges and universities within the state. Truly, closing the attainment gap requires commitment and dedication throughout all of the educational systems of the state, as well as continued support by state government. I'd like to specifically call out some of the work that OHE has done in this area. In addition to providing detailed data and research to understand the problem and measure our progress, this work also includes providing direct service to high school students through our Get Ready program, providing outreach and support for financial aid completion to families through virtual events, holding listening sessions for stakeholders in Greater Minnesota and in the metro area, training community volunteers like librarians to provide college access information to potential adult students, holding focus groups with state ethnic councils, and working collaboratively with campuses around the state to identify better ways to support students who are balancing the responsibilities of school and parenting, just to name a few of our specific outreach efforts in the past year. We also work directly with campus financial aid departments to ensure students get the state-based aid they need. I think we've lost the PowerPoint.
Yes, we have.
I'll give Nikki a second to pull that back up, but if not, let me see if I can.
I'm getting it back up. I apologize.
No problem. While she pulls that up, I'll share a few other outreach efforts. We also can, as I mentioned, we continue to work directly with campus financial aid departments to ensure that students get the state-based aid that they need. We're also working directly with our financial aid advisory group and stakeholders to talk about upcoming changes to the federal FAFSA form and the ways that that will potentially impact the state grant in the future. As you can see that since 2015, we've made progress in every category, which shows that we are moving in the right direction. That said, we still have significant ground to cover by 2025, and COVID has been a negative impact on enrollment, as we shared last week. Considering this, it might be helpful to quickly touch on some of the specific ways that the Office of Higher Education responded to the COVID challenge. Since the pandemic began, we have worked to leverage our virtual capacity to connect to more stakeholders around the state, both in the community and on campuses. And Nikki can go to the next slide, please. This has taken the form of adding public engagement calls, hosting online FAFSA events, and launching the Life After Now podcast to our existing forms of outreach and stakeholder engagement. We've also adapted to changing conditions within the K-12 environment to provide both virtual and in-person programming related to career development and college planning to over 4,500 high school students through our Get Ready program. And that's 4,500 just this year alone. Last year, we were able to provide outreach to over 6,000 high school students through our Get Ready program. We've also sought to provide practical support to our self-loan borrowers, including providing flexibility around interest rates and forbearances, and even some forgiveness for a small number of borrowers. I'd also like to note that we have originated over $2.4 billion in loans since the inception of this program and continue to see low levels of loan default rates, making this an important financial aid option for some students. The Office of Higher Education has also been engaged in setting up targeted programs for economic recovery, including Commissioner Olson's work with the Next Generation Nursing Assistant Program, which set the ambitious goal of providing CNA training to 1,000 students in order to respond to critical shortages in the long-term care setting and other healthcare settings. This program was a real win-win, as healthcare system was able to fill critically needed positions, and students were able to have a cost-free training opportunity that we hope may help them consider longer-term careers in the healthcare sector. Through the American Rescue Plan funds and the LCRC process, the Office of Higher Education secured funding to launch the Minnesota Future Together Grants programs. This program, which was built off of the Workforce Stabilization Grants framework, is designed to provide a tuition-free pathway for eligible students going into high-need career areas like healthcare, education, and public service, just to name a few. This program works hand-in-hand with other targeted financial aid programs to ensure that we serve as many students as possible. The first round of grants through this program was awarded in spring 2022. And as the dust is still sort of settling on spring enrollment patterns, we don't have numbers yet to report, but we'll continue working with our tribal and public college partners to award these grants through 2024 or until all funds are dispersed. Finally, I want to note that while we continue to respond to the challenges of COVID, we are also working on other new initiatives or expanded initiatives to promote college access, affordability, and completion. This includes, but is definitely not limited to, our new direct admissions pilot, the expansion of the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program, the Hunger Free Campus Grants Program, and our Fostering Independence Grants. I know that between last week and this week, we've provided a lot of information, and I do want to be mindful of time, so I'll stop here, and I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Robinson, I'm wondering if you could answer a couple of questions for me based upon the slides that you presented today. The first is you have a target of improving your percentages for those in higher education by 2025. And you relate that in a percentage. I'm wondering if you could give me a real world number in terms of number of students that represents.
Dr. Robinson.
Thank you for that question. I don't have that figure in front of me, but I suspect I would be able to have that fairly quickly and would be glad to answer that as soon as I have that information available.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Robinson, you also, in a number of your graphs, show one example, 2015, and another one for the response. But I see small fence brackets above the bars themselves. I'm wondering if I missed something or I don't understand what those little brackets mean on the top of the graph, the bars in the graphs.
Dr. Robinson.
Thank you for that question. May I clarify, is there a particular slide that you were looking at?
If you could pull up any one of the last two or three slides in the presentation deck, I can point you in the direction of one of those.
Thank you. While we pull that up, I do want to note that those are the bars represent the possible statistical error. So within any chart, you know, the plus or minus in a given direction.
All right, and I think that's notable given the fact that, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that's notable, particularly when we look at the demographic breakdown of the, as you say, the standard deviation or the range of error that might be proposed by any one of those demographic groups. I think it's particularly worth pointing out the range that portrays and actually the concern for some of those groups that you would target for improving their ability to attain a higher educational degree. That would be concerning, and not only I'd imagine to your group, but all legislators in terms of the range of discrepancy for some of those numbers. One of your graphs also talked about outreach and the focus of some of your recent efforts. I'm wondering if you have any numbers related to the conversions from those attending those outreach seminars and how they were converted to actual attendees at a higher educational institution.
Dr. Robinson.
Yes, thank you for the question. And I do want to provide clarity on the data charts. We do pull that data from U.S. Census data, so we just are trying to make sure that we adequately and accurately represent the margin of error that to sort of naturally exists within census data. So that just to clarify where that information came from. I do also want to respond to the earlier question in terms of the number of new adults or of adults earning a new credential that we'll have to meet that 70% goal. It's 108,500 adults by 2025 is the raw number that we would be looking at. And in terms
Could she repeat that number a little more slowly? I failed to write it down.
Dr. Robinson.
Yes, thank you. That number is 108,500.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, so in order to attain your goal of 70% in the next 3 years, your efforts in order to reach your goal have to provide for an additional 100,000 residents of the state of Minnesota attaining some type of degree from a higher ed institution. Is that what you're looking for?
Dr. Robinson.
Yes, and I do want to note, I have a request from Nikki Oliver to join me to respond to this question.
Ms. Oliver.
Hi, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Nikki Oliver. I am the Director of Grants and Government Relations for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Currently, almost a million individuals have attained a credential already, so it's not out of the realm for us to increase attainment by a little over 100,000. And we do produce an educational attainment goal report that you all should have already received that one talks about, breaks down the count by race and ethnicity in numbers. So we kind of see the additional American Indians we would need to meet the goal, Asian population, Black, and so forth and so on. So that is also broken down. It also specifically talks about the margin of error in each of the categories, giving you the percentage of credentials already received and the margin of error within those percentages. So that is all also mentioned in the report, including the numbers within those margins of error. For example, if we looked at credentials received by individuals who are Hispanic, we currently have 27,200, and the margin of error is plus or minus 800 individuals. So all of that is contained within that report, and I'm happy to resend it to the committee. Some of the questions that Representative Albright is asking are also mentioned and answered within that report in great detail.
Representative Albright, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Ms. Oliver and Ms. Robinson, even if I give you the benefit of a doubt of 4 years to attain your goal, that means that you've got to come up with 25,000 more students that have not been in the system or identified in the system previously. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that we graduate about 50,000, near 60,000 high schoolers every year. So you're actually asking the state of Minnesota either to come forward with probably another, if we say half of those that weren't going into a college or a certificate granting program. I'm compelled to ask you to go back and look at your numbers or the timeline that which you are hoping to attain the goal, because I think you're setting yourself up for failure. It's a grand goal. I don't dispute that, but I think that your expectations for the numbers per year are faulty, and I'll leave it at that.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Robinson, how many programs does OHE oversee, and how many staff keep track of the data that you collect or the scholarships that you provide or the assistance? Can you answer that question? Because as I read through all your materials, especially that which I'm getting in email now, the reports, I'm just concerned about how many programs OHE does oversee. Thank you.
Dr. Robinson.
Yes, I'd be glad to answer that question. If I could, I'd like to just respond very quickly to the comment from Representative Albright to provide some clarification. I think one important clarification is to remember that the 70% attainment goal is not an OHE goal. This is a goal that was set by the legislature in 2015. And so this is something that OHE has been working on for a number of years and has been an area of focus identified as really critical to our state. In order to meet that goal by 2025, it does require, it will account for the students who are already currently in the higher education pipeline, so all of our students who are already in college and making progress toward that goal. It also provides for opportunities for won't necessarily be a four-year degree. It could be a certificate. It could be a two-year degree. And we know that we have a large percentage of adults in the state of Minnesota who have some college but no degree. We estimate over 500,000 adults fall into that category. And so that's a group that we are also actively working with to help them come back and into higher education and to finish what they start in order to earn that credential. And so it is a lofty goal because our starting place, we are already at the head of the nation in terms of our level of completion. And so, the legislature did set an ambitious goal for us, and we will continue to do all that we can to make progress on that goal.
And then Dr. Robinson, did you want Representative Erickson to re-ask her question, or do you remember it?
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. If Representative Erickson could restate that, that would be very helpful.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Robinson, I was wondering how many programs that OHE oversees and how many staff keep track of the data or provide information for the students or others who may qualify. For example, if it's a special program that provides financial assistance.
Dr. Robinson.
I don't have thank you, Chair Bernardi. I don't have the total number of programs in front of me at the moment, but we can definitely look that up and be able to provide that information. And we do have a small but mighty research department that has, as of today, we have a new staff member joining us today in our research department. We have four people who are really taking the lead on our data collection and analysis for the agency as a whole, although there are a number of people who are obviously involved in producing the reports and the materials that are sent to the members of the committee. But I will find specific numbers and make sure we get those sent to you.
Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just that. I would imagine as we provide you with more programs, you need more staff. So we need to keep that balance in mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's see, are there the members, do you have any further questions?
And if I may, Chair Bernardi, I will note that we do.
Dr. Robinson.
That we do have 71 staff in total. So we are small but mighty.
Thank you. And Representative Erickson, I believe you were done, but I'm just verifying your hand is still up in your mirror again. Okay, I see no further questions. I thank you for being here, Dr. Robinson, today with the presentation for the Office of Higher Education. Do you have any further remarks that you would like to make?
Yes, thank you, Chair Bernardi. I do want to just ask one additional clarification from Representative Erickson so that we can make sure we provide the accurate information. When you ask about the number of programs, are you specifically meaning financial aid programs or our competitive grants or outreach or just sort of more broadly focused programs that we offer?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think more broadly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so Dr. Robinson, did you have any closing remarks that you would like to make today? We're done with questions and just wanted to know if you wanted to wrap up.
I just say thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate the opportunity to come back and to be able to finish the presentation this week.
Thank you very much for being here, Dr. Robinson and Nikki Oliver. Members, that is, we got through our agenda today earlier. You get now a half hour back in your day. Happy belated Valentine's Day, I guess. And with that, thanks again for our student testifiers who were here today as well. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 22nd. The meeting is adjourned.